ask me a question, probably something like how I was doing or if everything was okay at home. But he knew better. Everything was fine or good or okay. It had been fine or good or okay in his class the year before, too. He seemed to remember to ask me on Fridays. By Christmas break, he'd stopped. After half the students had returned, Mr. Mason looked at me over his glasses.
Okay, Catherine?
Not wanting to protest in front of everyone, I nodded and stood, concentrating on the green and white tiles as I walked. Giggling and chatter grew louder, then several pairs of shoes came into view. I stopped at the end of the water fountain line, and the clones giggled.
It was nice of you to stay at the back of the line, Presley said.
I'm not drinking after her,
her friend Anna Sue muttered. I dug my thumbnail into my arm. Presley shot a smirk to her friend and then addressed me.
How's the bed and breakfast, Kathy? It looked closed the last time I drove by.
I sighed. Catherine.
Excuse me?
Presley said, pretending to be offended that I even responded. I looked up at her. My name is Catherine.
Oh, Presley mocked. Kit Kat's feeling feisty. She's decided to walk among the peasants, Minka muttered.
I gritted my teeth, letting go of my arm to ball my hand into a fist.
I heard it's haunted,
Tatum said, the excitement of drama sparking in her eyes. She raked her bleached tresses out of her eyes.
Yes, I snapped back, and we drink the blood of virgins, so you're all safe, I said, turning for the classroom.
I rushed for the safety of Mr. Mason's presence, sliding into my desk. He didn't notice, even though no one was distracting him. No one was talking or moving. It was almost too hot to breathe. Scotty returned, wiping drops of water off his chin with the back of his hand. The gesture reminded me of Poppy, and I wondered if she would be at the Juniper when I got home, how much help Mama would need, and if anyone new had checked in while I was gone.
Can I help you?
Mr. Mason asked. I looked up from a notepad. Elliot Youngblood stood with a gigantic boat of a sneaker partially inside the threshold of the doorway, one hand holding a small white paper, a faded red backpack strap on the other. More students returned, pushing Elliot forward a step as they shouldered past him, like he was an inanimate object in their way. No apologies. No acknowledgement that they had brushed their sweaty skin against him without so much as an excuse me.
Is that for me?
Mr. Mason asked, nodding to the paper in Elliot's hand. Elliot walked forward, the top of his head barely clearing the small paper Saturn hanging from the ceiling. I imagined ways to hate him. People who were too tall or too short or to anything, usually had exaggerated feelings of inferiority, and Elliot had likely become sensitive and insecure, impossible to be around. Elliot's bulky arm reached out to give Mr. Mason the paper. His nose wrinkled on one side when he sniffed. I was mad at his nose and his muscles, and that he looked so different and so much taller and older. Mostly, I hated him for leaving me alone to find out Dad had died. I had given him my entire summer, my last summer with Dad, and I'd needed him, and he'd just left me there. Mr. Mason squinted his eyes as he read the note, then placed it with the haphazardly stacked papers on his desktop.
Welcome, Mr. Youngblood. Mr. Mason looked up at Elliot. Do you come to us from the White Eagle?
Elliot lifted one eyebrow in shock at such an ignorant statement.
No?
Mr. Mason pointed to an empty seat in the back, and Elliot walked quietly down my aisle. A few snickers floated in the air, and I glanced back, seeing Elliot trying to fit his endless legs under the confines of the desk. My height was on the short side. It hadn't occurred to me that the desks were best suited for children.
Elliot was a man, a giant, and he wasn't going to fit in a one-size-fits-all anything. The metal hinges creaked as Elliot adjusted again, and more giggles erupted.
"All right, all right,"
Mr. Mason said, standing. When he raised his arms to gesture for the class to settle down, his dark sweat stains became visible, and the students laughed even more. The school counselor walked in and scanned heads until she stopped on Elliot. Looking wholly disappointed, she sighed.
"We've discussed this, Milo. Elliot is going to need a table and a chair. I thought you had one in here."
Mr. Mason frowned, unhappy with a second disruption.
"I'm okay,"
Elliot said. His voice was deep and smooth, embarrassment dripping off each word.
"Mrs. Mason?"
Mr. Mason said her name with the disdain of a soon-to-be ex-husband.
"We have it under control."
The concerned look on her face vanished, and she shot him an irritated look. The rumor was that the Masons had decided on a trial separation the previous spring, but it was going significantly better for Mrs. Mason than it was for Mr. Mrs. Mason had lost 40-ish pounds, grown out and highlighted her brunette hair, and wore more makeup. Her skin was brighter, and the wrinkles around her eyes were gone. She was full of happiness, and it had begun to seep out of her skin and eyes and pour out all over the floor, practically leaving a trail of rose-scented rainbows everywhere she walked. Mrs. Mason was better without her husband. Without his wife, Mr. Mason wasn't much at all. Mr. Mason held up his hands, palms out.
"It's in the storage closet. I'll drag it back out."
"It's really not a big deal," Elliot said.
"Trust me, son," Mr. Mason murmured. "If Mrs. Mason decides on something, you best do it."
"That's right," Mrs. Mason said, her patience at an end. "So get it done."
Even when she was cross, happiness still twinkled in her eyes. Her heels clicked against the tile as she left the classroom and clomped down the hallway. We lived in a town of 1,000, and even 2 years after Dad had been laid off, not many jobs were available. The Masons had no choice but to continue working together unless one of them moved. This year seemed like a standoff. Waiting to hear who was moving would be an interesting twist to our usual school year. I liked both the Masons, but it seemed like one of them would be leaving Oak Creek soon. Mr. Mason closed his eyes and rubbed his temples with his thumb and middle finger. The classroom was quiet. Even kids knew not to test a man facing the end of his marriage.
"All right, all right,"
Mr. Mason said, looking up.
"Scotty, take my keys and get that table and chair that I had you stow in the storage room the first day of school. Take Elliot and a couple of desks with you."
Scotty walked over to Mr. Mason's desk, picked up his keys, and then signaled for Elliot to follow.
"It's just down the hall,"
Scotty said, waiting for Elliot to find a way out of his desk. The laughter had melted away like our deodorant. The door opened, and a small breeze was sucked into the room, prompting those sitting next to the door to let out a small, involuntary sigh of relief. Mr. Mason let his hands fall to his desk, rustling the paper beneath.
"They've got to cancel school. We're all going to get heat stroke. You kids can't concentrate like this. I can't concentrate like this. Mrs. McKinstry let us have our English class under that big oak tree between the school and the auditorium building,"
Elliot said. His long, dark waves were reacting to the heat, humidity, and sweat, looking stringy and dull. He took a rubber band and pulled it back into a half ponytail, making it look like a bun, with most of his hair sticking out the bottom.
"That's not a bad idea, although," Mr. Mason said, thinking out loud, "it's probably hotter outside than it is inside by now." "At least there's a breeze outside," Scotty said, huffing and dripping sweat as he helped Elliot carry in the table.
Elliot held the chair with his free hand, along with his red backpack. I hadn't noticed him carry it out, and I noticed everything.
I looked at the vent above Mr. Mason's head. The white strings were lying limp. The air conditioning had finally met its demise.
"Oh, my God, Mr. Mason," Minka whined, leaning over her desk. "I'm dying."
Mr. Mason saw me looking up and did the same, standing when he realized what I already knew. The vents weren't blowing. The air conditioner was broken, and Mr. Mason's classroom was on the sunny side of the school.
"Okay, everyone out. It's only going to get hotter in here. Out, out, out,"
he yelled after several seconds of students looking around in confusion. We gathered our things and followed Mr. Mason into the hallway. He instructed us to sit at the long rectangular tables in the commons area while he found Principal Augustine.
"I'll be back," Mr. Mason said. "Either they're letting school out or we're having class at the ice cream parlor down the street."
Everyone cheered but me. I was busy glaring at Elliot Youngblood. He sat in a chair next to me at the empty table I'd chosen.
"Your Highness," Elliot said.
"Don't call me that," I said quietly, glancing around to see if anyone had heard. The last thing I needed was for them to have something new to make fun of me for. He leaned closer.
"What are the rest of your classes? Maybe we have more together."
"We don't."
"How do you know?"
he asked. "Wishful thinking." The school secretary, Mrs. Rosalski, came over the PA system.
"Attention, all students, please stand by for an announcement from Dr. Augustine."
Some shuffling could be heard, and then Dr. Augustine's voice came over in her chipper, 13-year-old tone.
"Good afternoon, students. As you may have noticed, the air conditioning unit has been on the fritz today, and we've officially called a time of death. Afternoon classes have been canceled, as have tomorrow's. Hopefully, we'll have the issue corrected by Friday. The school's automated system will call to notify your parents when classes will resume via the phone number we have on file. Buses will run early. For any non-driving students, please have your parents or a guardian pick you up as we are under a heat advisory today. Enjoy your vacation."
Everyone around me stood and cheered, and seconds later the halls filled with excited, jumping teenagers. I looked down at the doodle on my notepad. A 3D cube and the alphabet in a bold font were surrounded by thick vines.
"That's not bad," Elliot said. "Do you take an art class?"
I slid my things toward me and pushed my chair back as I stood. After just a few steps toward my locker, Elliot called my name.
"How are you getting home?"
he asked. After several seconds of hesitation, I answered.
"I walk." "All the way across town? The heat index has been triple digits."
"What's your point?" I asked, turning to face him. He shrugged.
"I have a car. It's an ancient piece of crap 1980 model Chrysler, but the AC will freeze you out if it's set on high. I thought maybe we could stop at Brahms and get a cherry limeade, and then I'd take you home."
The fantasy of a cherry limeade and air conditioning made my muscles relax. Brahms was now the town's only sit-down restaurant, and a ride in Elliot's car, out of the sun, all the way to my house sounded like heaven. But when he parked at my house, he'd expect to come in, and if he came in, he would see. "Since when do you have a car?" He shrugged.
"Since my 16th birthday."
"No." I turned on my heel and headed for my locker. He'd had a car for almost 2 years. There was no question now. He'd broken his promise. I'd had homework every day for the past 2 weeks, since the first day of school. Leaving the high school without my backpack or books made me run over a mental checklist obsessively. I felt a momentary bout of panic every fifth step or so. I crossed Main Street and turned left toward South Avenue, a road on the edge of town that passed all the way through to the west side, straight to Juniper Street. By the time I reached the corner of Main and South, my mind bounced from wishing for a hat, water, and sunscreen to cussing at myself for turning down Elliot's offer. The sun beat down on my hair and shoulders,
After 5 minutes of walking, droplets of sweat began to drip down my neck and the side of my face. My throat felt like I'd swallowed sand. I walked into Mr. Newby's yard to stand beneath their shade trees for a few minutes, debating whether to stand in their sprinkler before carrying on. A boxy, russet-colored sedan parked next to the curb, and the driver leaned over, bobbing up and down as he rolled down the manual window. Elliot's head popped up.
Does a cold drink and air conditioning sound good yet?
I left the shade and continued walking without responding. Persistent people were persistent with all things they wanted. At this moment, Elliot wanted to give me a ride home. Later, he might want to come inside the juniper or hang out again. The poop mobile drove slowly next to me. Elliot didn't say another word, even though the window remained down, letting his precious air conditioning escape. I walked along the curb in the grass, silently grateful for the short burst of cold air coming from the Chrysler's passenger side. After 3 more blocks and seeing me wipe sweat from my brow for the 10th time, Elliot tried again.
Okay, we don't have to get a drink. I'll just take you home.
I kept walking, even though my feet were hot and my head felt like it was sizzling. With no clouds to break up the sun's rays, exposure was particularly brutal.
Catherine, please let me drive you home. I won't talk to you. I'll drop you off and drive away.
I stopped, squinting under the bright light from above. The whole world seemed to be sun-bleached, the only movement the heat waves dancing over the asphalt.
No talking?
I asked, holding my hand against my forehead to shield my eyes long enough to see his face. His eyes would tell me even if he didn't.
If that's what you want, if that's what will get you out of the sun, it's dangerous, Catherine. You still have 3 miles to go.
I thought for a moment. He was right. I had no business walking that far in triple-digit heat. And what good would I be to Mama if I was sunsick?
Not a word? I asked.
I swear.
I made a face. You don't keep your promises.
I'm back, aren't I?
When I frowned, Elliot held out his hand, waving me in.
Please, Catherine, let me take you home.
He pushed the gear into park and then leaned over again, his bicep tensing nicely as he reached for the handle and pushed open the passenger door. I slid into the chocolate velour seat, closing the door and cranking up the window. I sat back, letting the cold air blow against my skin.
Thank you, I said, closing my eyes.
True to his word, Elliot didn't respond as he pulled away from the curb. I looked over at him, his Adam's apple bobbing as he swallowed, his fingers fidgeting on the steering wheel. He was nervous. I wanted to tell him I wouldn't buy it, that I might still hate him for leaving and making me miss him for 2 years, but there were far more important things in the world to be afraid of than me.
Chapter 8. Catherine.
Baby, baby, baby,
Althea said, pulling me into her arms. She guided me to a kitchen stool, rushing to the sink and wetting a rag with cool water. I smiled, resting my chin on the heel of my hand. Althea didn't stay with us very often, but she fussed over me, and she couldn't have chosen a better time to check in. She folded the rag and pressed it against my forehead, holding it steady.
It's so hot, I can't even wear my wig. What were you thinking, child?
That I had to get home, I said, closing my eyes.
The house was still stuffy and warm, but at least the sun wasn't bearing down on me.
Do you think Mama would let us turn on the air conditioner?
Althea sighed, wiped her hands on her apron, and perched her hands on her hips.
I thought it already was. Let me check.
Her skirt swished against her thick thighs as she sauntered across the room. She leaned in, squinting at the thermostat. She shook her head.
It's set on 60. Room temperature is 89.
She clicked her tongue against the roof of her mouth.
My, your mama gonna have to call someone.
I can do it, I said, beginning to stand.
Baby girl, sit yourself down. The parts of you that ain't red are stark white,
Althea said, rushing over to me. She forced me into a chair and then rummaged through the cabinets until she found a clean glass. She filled it with ice from the freezer and then grabbed a pitcher of sweet tea.
You just sit and drink this. Your mama will be home soon, and she can call the fool who works for heating and air.
I smiled at Althea. She was one of my favorite guests. Just thinking about dealing with Poppy and her father made me tired.
So, she began, leaning on her elbows, how was school?
The same, I said. Well, almost the same. There's a new boy at school. He gave me a ride home today.
Oh,
Althea said, intrigued. She had flour smeared on her face. She'd been making something again. She was the only guest who helped Mama at the Juniper, but that was because Althea couldn't sit still. She would bake or clean while humming the same happy tune, some old church hymn I vaguely recognized. Her hair was pinned back in a low bun, with one dark strand hanging loose in the front. She was fanning herself with a paper plate, sweat glistening on her chest and forehead. "It's Elliot," I said, hoping she would recognize the name. She didn't.
"Who's that? I'm sorry, baby. I've been so wrapped up with work and my Bible concordance that I've barely been able to pay attention."
"I met him 2 summers ago. He was my friend."
"Was your friend or is your friend?"
She raised an eyebrow.
"Because you need a friend, child. You need 10 friends. You spend too much time working. Lord knows too much for a little girl."
"Was," I said, picking at the granite.
"Uh-oh," Althea said. "What happened?"
"He left and didn't say goodbye. And he broke a promise."
"What promise?"
she asked, her tone defensive. "To come back." Althea smiled and leaned closer, reaching for my hands.
"My baby, you listen to Miss Althea. He did come back."
She stood, returning to the sink. She turned on the tap, preparing to fill the basin with water and wash the dishes that wouldn't fit in the dishwasher.
"Sounds to me like when he did, he came straight home."
"I needed him," I said. "He left when I needed him, and now that I don't, he shows up. He's too late." Althea swirled her fingers in the water, mixing in the dish soap. She looked up, but didn't turn around, and she spoke slow and sweet. I could hear the smile in her voice, like she was remembering a simpler time.
"Maybe you still need him."
"Nope," I said, taking the last drink of my tea. The ice slid and surprise attacked my face. I set the glass down and wiped my mouth.
"Well, you need someone. It's not good to spend so much time alone. In that whole school, you can't find one friend. Not one."
I stood. "I have homework, and then I need to start on laundry." Althea clicked her tongue.
"I'll do it later, after I call the repairman. Lord Jesus, it's too hot to breathe,"
she says as she sweats over a tub full of hot water scrubbing dishes, I teased. Althea glared at me over her shoulder, that no-nonsense mom glare that I loved so much. Sometimes I wished Althea would stay. It would be nice to be taken care of for a change. Althea's grandchildren lived somewhere in Oak Creek, but when she visited, she stayed with us to keep her daughter's controlling husband happy. She was the only good thing about the Juniper. "We don't have school tomorrow, either. Their AC is broken, too."
"Guess it's going around," she said, unhappy. "You need to find someplace cool to rest. The upstairs is worse than it is down here."
I set my glass on the sink and then walked past the thermostat in the dining room, tapping it as if that would do any good. It didn't move, and the dust and heat were choking me, so I pushed out the front door and sat on the swing. Occasionally, a light breeze would blow through the lattice on each side of our porch, providing a momentary break from the stifling heat. I gently pushed off from the wooden slats of the porch, rocking back and forth, waiting for the sun to set, watching cars drive by and listening to the screams of kids a few blocks down, probably the ones with an above-ground pool. The chains creaked in a slow rhythm, and I leaned back, glancing up at the dust-covered cobwebs on the ceiling. Something touched the bare skin just above my right knee, and I yelped, sitting up.
"Sorry, I was walking by and saw you sitting here. Thought I'd stop."
"Walking by from where?" I asked, rubbing my knee. The girl before me frowned.
"Down the street, dummy. You want to watch a movie tonight?"
"I don't know, Tess. We'll see." Tess was 17, like me, homeschooled, a little quirky and blunt, but I enjoyed her visits. She stopped by when she was bored or when I needed a friend. She had a sixth sense that I appreciated. Her hair was piled on top of her head, and she wore what looked like hand-me-downs from her older brother, Jacob. I'd never met him, but she talked about him so much that I felt like I had. She sniffed, wiping her nose with the back of her hand.
"How's things?"
She didn't look at me when she spoke, just stared down the street toward where she lived.
"Okay. Elliot is back."
"Oh, yeah?
How's that going?"
"I'm still mad. Althea says I shouldn't be."
"Althea is pretty smart, but I'm going to have to disagree. I think you should stay away from him."
I sighed. "You're probably right.
I mean, all you really know about him is that he likes cameras and leaving."
I swallowed. "He used to like me."
Tess frowned. "How are you going to explain to Minka and Owen that you've decided you can have friends after all?"
I smiled at her.
"I have you."
She mirrored my expression.
"Yes, you do. So you don't need Elliot."
I made a face.
"No, I don't. I wouldn't chance going through that again anyway."
"I remember. You've just started getting over him, and then he shows up. Pretty cruel, if you ask me."
She stood.
"I should go. Jacob is waiting on me."
"Okay. See you later."
I leaned back, closing my eyes, letting another breeze flow over me. The boards in the porch creaked, and I could tell, even with my eyes closed, that someone had stepped in front of me. The sun was shadowed, making the dark even darker. My eyes popped open, and I squinted. Elliot was standing over me with a large fountain drink in each hand. The styrofoam cups were dripping with sweat, and a cherry stem was poking out from the lid, lodged under the plastic. He held one cup in front of my face.
"Cherry limeade."
"You promised," I said, staring at the cup. Elliot sat beside me, sighing.
"I know, but you said it yourself. I break promises."
He held out the drink again, and I took it, sealing my lips over the straw. I took a sip, tasting the ice-cold tart lime and too-sweet cherry syrup, the carbonation bubbling on my tongue.
"I've missed you, whether you want to believe it or not. I thought about you every day. I tried everything to get back to you." "I'm sorry about your..."
"Stop talking," I said, closing my eyes. He waited for a while, then spoke as if he couldn't stop himself.
"How's your mom?"
"She deals with it in her own way."
"Is Presley still Presley?"
I chuckled and looked at him. "You've been at school for a whole day. What do you think?" He nodded once.
"I think yes."
"You've got to stop doing that," I said.
"What?"
"Speaking in questions. The way your tone goes up, it's weird."
"Since when did you stop liking weird?"
"Since my life became its definition."
"You want me to watch my tone?"
He nodded once.
"Done."
Elliot looked like he'd spent his time away living in a gym. His neck was thick, his jaw square, and the curves of his shoulders and arms defined and solid. He moved with more confidence, gazed into my eyes for too long, and smiled with the kind of charm that came with arrogance. I liked him the way he was before. Gangly and awkward, soft-spoken and quietly defiant. He was humble then. Now I was looking at a boy who knew he was attractive and certain that single trait would earn him forgiveness. My smile faded and I faced forward. We're different now, Elliot. I don't need you anymore. He looked down, frowning but not yet defeated.
Looks like you don't need anyone. I noticed Minka and Owen walk by, and you didn't even look at them.
So?
Catherine, I left all my friends, my football team, my mom. I came back.
I noticed.
For you.
Stop it. He sighed.
You can't stay mad at me forever.
I stood, tossing the drink at him. He caught it against his chest, but the lid popped off, and red liquid splashed his white shirt and face. I spat out an involuntary laugh. Elliot's eyes were closed, his mouth open, but after the initial shock, he grinned.
Okay, I deserve that.
It wasn't funny anymore.
You deserve a soda in the face? My dad died, Elliot. They carried out his body on a gurney while I watched in front of the whole neighborhood. My mom mentally checked out. You were supposed to be my friend, and you just left me standing there.
I didn't want to.
Tears burned my eyes. You're a coward. He stood, a head and a half taller than me. I knew he was staring at the top of my head, but I wouldn't look at him.
My mom came to get me. I tried to explain. She saw the ambulance and police car and freaked out. She forced me to go with her. I was 15 at the time. Catherine, come on.
I craned my neck, narrowing my eyes at him.
And since then?
I wanted to call, but you don't have a phone, and then mine got taken away. I was angry about the way they made me leave. I snuck a couple of phone calls to my aunt to check on you, but she refused to go to your house. She said things had changed, that your mom wouldn't speak to her anyway. I was caught halfway to Oak Creek a week after I got my car, and my dad put a 45-mile-per-hour governor on it. I tried to drive here anyway, and they took my car away. I tried talking all my friends into driving me here. I tried everything to get back to you, Catherine. I swear to God.
That means nothing to me. There is no God, I grumbled. He touched his finger to my chin and gently lifted it until my gaze met his.
The second my parents told me they were getting a divorce, I asked to come live with my aunt until it was settled. I told them I didn't want to spend my senior year in the middle of their war, but we all knew the real reason. I needed to get back to you.
Why? I asked. Why were they so hell-bent on keeping you away from me?
The day I left, Aunt Lee called my mom. It came up that we were spending a lot of time together. My mom had a hard time here. She hates Oak Creek, and she didn't want me to have a reason to stay. She was hoping I'd forget about you.
But you're here. I guess she gave up?
She doesn't care about anything anymore, Catherine. Not even herself.
I felt my resolve wavering, and I pressed my cheek against his chest. He wrapped his arms around me, heat radiating through his thin white t-shirt.
I'm sorry, he said. I didn't want to leave you here like that. I didn't want to leave you at all.
When I didn't respond, he tried to guide me toward the door.
Let's go inside.
I pushed away from him, shaking my head. You can't.
Go in? Why?
You have to leave.
Catherine,
I closed my eyes. Just because I was angry at the way you left me doesn't mean I've missed you. I haven't. At all.
Why not? Because of the dozens of friends you have hanging around?
I glared up at him. Leave me alone.
Look around. You're already alone.
Elliot turned on his heel, shoved his hands into the pockets of his cargo shorts, and walked down the steps and through the gate to the street. He didn't turn right toward his aunt's. I wasn't sure where he was going, and I tried not to care. My eyes filled with tears, and I sat on the swing, once again pushing back and listening to the chains squeak against the hook from where they hung. The swing sank lower, and I involuntarily leaned against Althea, who'd sat down next to me. I hadn't even heard her come outside.
You done run that poor boy off.
Good. Chapter 9. Catherine. Mr. Mason turned away from his scribblings on the smart board, wiping his brow with a handkerchief. It was still in the mid-90s, and the teachers were getting crankier every day.
Come on, you guys. It's almost October. You should know this. Anyone?
The leg of Elliot's table screeched against the tile floor, and we all turned to stare at him.
Sorry, he said. Is the table working out for you?
Mr. Mason asked.
Mrs. Mason has been hounding me for an update.
It's fine, he said.
Heard you won the quarterback spot,
Mr. Mason said.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Elliot said.
Barely,
Scotty sniffed.
Every girl in class immediately looked at Elliot with a sparkle in her eye, and I faced forward, feeling my cheeks get hot. Photoelectric effect, I said, desperate to take attention away from Elliot.
That's right,
Mr. Mason said, pleasantly surprised.
That's right. Good job, Catherine. Thank you.
The door opened and Mrs. Mason stepped in, looking trim and glowing. Mr. Mason?
Mrs. Mason,
he grumbled. I need to see Catherine Calhoun in my office, please.
You couldn't have sent an aide?
Mr. Mason asked. Hope was in his eyes, as if he were waiting for his estranged wife to admit she'd just wanted to see him. I was next door. Revenge glimmered in her eyes. Coach Peckham was teaching health one classroom over, and it was rumored they were dating. Catherine, gather your things. You won't be back today. I glanced over my shoulder at Elliot, although I wasn't sure why. Maybe because I knew he'd be the only person to care why I was being summoned to the counselor's office. He was sitting forward, a combination of curiosity and concern on his face. I leaned over to shove my textbook, notepad, and pen into my backpack, and then stood, sliding my arms through the straps. Mr. Mason nodded to me and then continued with his lecture, pointing to his pitiful illustrations of photoelectrons on the board. Mrs. Mason led me down the hallway, across the commons area, to the office. Her long legs took small but graceful steps within the confines of the pencil skirt she wore. The hem hit just below her knee, almost modest if it hadn't been skin tight, balancing the sheer red blouse with the first three buttons undone. I smiled. She was enjoying her freedom, and I hoped that would be me someday. We garnered stares from the school secretary, Mrs. Rosalski, a few of the office aides, and a few delinquents who were carrying out their in-house suspension. Mrs. Mason's door was already open, a knitted heart with her name embroidered in the center hanging from a single nail in the wood. She closed the door behind me and, with a smile, directed me to sit. Miss Calhoun, we haven't spoken in a while. Your grades look great. How are things?
Things are good, I said, barely able to look her in the eyes.
Catherine, she said, her voice warm. We've discussed this. You don't have to be embarrassed. I'm here to help.
I can't help it.
It wasn't your fault.
No, but it's still embarrassing.
I sat in this chair 3 times a week during the first half of my sophomore year, rehashing how I felt about my father's death. Mrs. Mason gave Mama 6 months, and when she felt Mama wasn't going to get better, she called DHS to go to the Juniper for an interview. That made Mama worse.
and late one night she ended up at the Masons' home. After that, I learned to pretend. Mrs. Mason summoned me once a week. Junior year was just once a month, and this year, I had just begun to think she wasn't going to call me in at all. She waited, her eyes soft and her small smile comforting. I wondered how Mr. Mason could have ever done anything but work hard to keep her. In any other town, she'd be married to a lawyer or businessman, counseling kids only because it was her passion. Instead, she'd married her high school sweetheart, who'd turned into a grumpy, round, sweaty, mustache-wearing lump of boring. I knew better than anything there were worse things to come home to, but Mrs. Mason was on her way to happy, and Mr. Mason wasn't it. "What about for you?" I asked. One side of her mouth turned up, accustomed to my deflection. "Catherine, you know I can't discuss. I know, but I'm just curious why you left if it wasn't that bad. Some people stay with better reasons to leave. I'm not judging you. I guess I'm just asking, at what point did you decide it was okay?" She watched me for a moment, trying to decide if being honest would help me. "The only reason you need to leave is if you don't want to stay. You know what I'm talking about. When you walk into a place and feel you don't belong, where you're not comfortable or even welcome, the important things are to be safe, happy, and healthy. And so many times those things are synonymous. When you're not yet an adult, it's important to let someone you trust help navigate that for you." I nodded and glanced at the clock. In 10 minutes, the bell would ring, and I'd be walking home in the heat to a place that fit every one of Mrs. Mason's descriptions. "How are things at home?" she repeated. "The bed and breakfast isn't busy. It's a lot of work, though. I still miss Dad." Mrs. Mason nodded. "Is your mom still talking to someone?" I shook my head. "She's better." Mrs. Mason could see that I was lying. "Catherine," she began, "I have a new friend." Her eyebrows lifted, creating 3 long lines across her forehead. "Really? That's great. Who?" "Elliot Youngblood." "The new quarterback. That's fun," she smiled. "He seems like a good kid." "He lives down the street from me. We walk down to Brahms sometimes." She sat forward, clasping her hands together. "I'm happy. I just... he's new. He seems... popular? Well-liked? Socially opposite of me?" Mrs. Mason smiled. "I was going to say he seems shy." I blinked. "I mean, I guess. I hadn't thought of him that way. I can't get him to shut up most of the time." Mrs. Mason's sing-song laugh filled the room. The bell rang and she stood. "Darn, I was hoping we'd have more time. Is it okay to meet again next month? I want to talk to you about college options." "Sure," I said, pulling on my backpack. Mrs. Mason opened the door to reveal Mrs. Rosalski standing on the other side of her desk, chatting with Elliot. He turned to me, looking relieved. "Mrs. Mason, Elliot needed to speak with Catherine before he left for football practice."
"I wanted to make sure you didn't need a ride home."
Mrs. Mason smiled at me, glad to have confirmed my claim. "That's very nice of you, Elliot." He knew I wouldn't turn him down in front of school staff, so I agreed and followed him out. He even took my bag, and Mrs. Mason seemed thrilled. Once Elliot pushed through the doors that led to the parking lot, I snatched my bag back and turned toward home.
"I figured," he said.
I stopped, turning on my heel.
"Figured what?" "That was for show. A thank you would be nice."
I wrinkled my nose. "Why would I thank you?"
"For giving you a chance to fool Mrs. Mason with whatever you're trying to fool her with?"
"You know nothing," I said, continuing my walk. Elliot jogged to catch up to me, tugging gently on my bag to slow me down.
"I still want to take you home."
I only accepted because I knew that would make Mrs. Mason feel better. I just have a few more months before I turn 18. If pretending not to hate you will keep her from calling DHS on my mom again, that's what I'll do. He frowned.
Why did she call DHS on your mom?
I walked away from him, holding the straps of my backpack.
You don't hate me,
he called. I trudged to the corner, fighting my conflicting emotions and Althea's words in my ear. I was behind on laundry, and even if Mama had done it while I was gone, she'd be upset with me. Elliot was distracting me, and creating any more stress for Mama was something I couldn't afford. When she was unhappy, everyone was unhappy, and that made for a very tense household. I stepped off the curb to cross the street, and then I was on my back, gasping for air. Elliot was hovering over me, his eyes wide.
Oh, God. Catherine, are you okay? I'm sorry.
Once my breath returned, I pushed at him. He pulled me to a sitting position while fighting my swinging arms.
What are you doing?
I yelled, fighting him. He pointed to the road.
You almost walked in front of a car,
he said, trying to subdue my wrists. I breathed hard, looking out to the road. Besides the high schoolers leaving the parking lot, other vehicles were driving into town from the highway, going faster than they should. I blinked, looking around, trying to gain the courage to apologize.
Thank you, I said. I was preoccupied.
Please let me take you home, he begged.
I nodded, shook up from almost becoming a pancake. I wondered what would happen to Mama and the juniper if something happened to me. I had to be more careful. Elliot's motor could still be heard a block away, and it made me angry that my heart was crying out the farther he drove. I didn't want to miss him. I didn't want him. Elliot being nice made it that much harder to hate him. My bag hit the dining chair with a smack, and I stood at the sink, filling a cup with cold water. The sweat that had evaporated in Elliot's air-conditioned Chrysler was still on my skin, and new beads began to form standing in the thick, stale air of the juniper. I set the cup down to splash my face once, and then used a dish towel to dry. The thinning fabric was soft against my skin, and I held it against my eyes, enjoying the dark until I heard a stool leg scrape across the floor.
Who is that? He's super tan, Tess said in her no-nonsense tone.
That, I said, getting another cup of water, was Elliot.
The boy who left?
I sighed, setting the cups on the island. Yes, and he can stay gone. That's one more complication I don't need.
For sure. Tell him you love him and start naming your future babies. Seriously, he'll run.
I laughed once, set one cup in front of Tess and the other in front of me. I gulped, and Tess watched me, disgusted.
Why don't you turn on the AC? There's an idea.
If you see Mama before I do, feel free to ask.
So, who was he?
None of your business. Tess put down her cup.
I'm out. It's got to be 90 degrees in here, and you're cranky. Oh, and you have a guest. He was checking in just before you got home.
I watched Tess leave, calling after her.
Who?
A few moments later, Duke yelled from upstairs.
Damn it, all to hell!
I heard something crash, and I rushed to stand at the last step. A door slammed, and then footsteps began walking down the hall, slow and steady, the wood creaking under Duke's weight. He peered down at me, wearing a stained white button-down with a loosened gray tie. His belly hung over the belt that held up his gray slacks, and he took a step down the stairs while hanging on to the banister.
No towels! How many times have I told you that I need fresh towels? I shower every day! I need a damn towel every day! How hard is that?
I swallowed, watching him descend the steps slowly. Althea had said the day before that she'd finished the laundry so I could talk to Elliot. Out of my routine, I'd forgotten to stock the rooms.
I'm sorry, Duke. I'll get this for you now.
It's too late. I had to stand in my bathroom and drip dry. Now I'm late. I'm sick and tired of needing something every time I check into this shithole. Towels are a basic accommodation. Basic! How do you not understand that?
I'll get the towels, I said, stepping toward the laundry. Duke descended the last two steps quickly and grabbed my arm, his thick fingers sinking into my flesh.
If it happens again.
He pulled me closer. He was short, at almost eye level with me, which didn't make the crazy look on his sweaty face any less intimidating. He stared at me, his nostrils flaring while he breathed heavily through his nose.
You just make sure it doesn't.
You'll have to let me go first, Duke, I said, balling my hand into a fist. He looked down at my hand and then turned me loose, shoving me away. I walked to the laundry, seeing the towels Althea had folded perfectly on top of the dryer. I took 5 thickly stacked white towels to Duke's regular room, knocking first. He didn't answer, so I cracked the door open. Hello? I asked, hoping for Poppy or Mama or anyone but Duke. I stepped across the empty bedroom, noting Duke's still-made bed and the open, empty suitcase on the stand next to the dresser. Hanging in the closet were all too familiar suits, allowing the always-present dull ache for my dad to grow into full-blown grief. I always missed him, but it didn't hurt until it did, and then realization and sadness crashed over me in waves. I had gotten better about crying on the inside. Shedding tears didn't change anything anyway. The bathroom was clean, the shower curtain closed. I bent down in front of the wooden shelf in the corner, placing the folded, fluffy white towels there. The rings on the shower curtain clicked behind me, and I stood, closing my eyes, waiting for whoever was standing there to make their presence known. When nothing happened, I turned around, noticing that the air conditioner had kicked on. The air blew through the vent, making the shower curtain gently wave. I breathed out, relieved, and then quickly left the room, taking the rest of the towels into Mama's room, saving just one for me. The rest of the rooms were vacant, but I looked for dirty laundry anyway, and then carried a nearly empty basket back downstairs, starting a small load in the washer. As water began to fill the deep basin, I silently cursed myself. It was stupid to leave my chores to someone else. I knew better. But ignoring my responsibilities for Elliot was exactly what had to be avoided. Keeping secrets meant not drawing attention to the juniper, and Duke getting angry enough to stay somewhere else for the night would draw attention. I could just imagine him taking his ratty, olive-green suitcase to the Holiday Inn in the next town over, causing a scene at the desk while he tried to check in with an ID that didn't match his name. We had to keep him happy. Otherwise, the very worst would happen, and I wasn't even sure what that was, except for knowing they would take Mama and me away from each other. Maybe for good. I spent the next hour cleaning, and just as I finished a noodle casserole, I heard the door open and close. I wasn't sure if it was Duke or Mama, so I waited for the sound of footsteps on the stairs. I tensed. Duke was already back.
Are there any damn towels?
He yelled as he neared the top floor.
Every time I step outside in this godforsaken town, I'm drenched in sweat.
There are fresh towels in your room, I called. He stomped down the stairs and I stiffened.
Did you just yell at me, little girl?
No, I called to you like you did to me. He narrowed his eyes and then wrinkled his nose, sniffing. He leaned over to look at the casserole dish behind me.
What's that?
A noodle casserole. Mama's recipe.
I've had that before.
I had to think back to remember when the last time was that we'd had it and when he was here. It was possible. It'll be ready in an hour. I turned the dial to 250 degrees.
It better be. The service around here is worse than having to waste away in this crap town.
If there's anything else you need, please let me know.
He stomped over to me, leaning in just inches from my face. I looked at the floor.
You trying to get rid of me, girl?
His teeth ground against one another, and he breathed through his nose again. The sound reminded me of a wild animal getting ready to charge. I shook my head. I'm just trying to make up for my mistake before. I want you to be happy here. Duke wouldn't be able to go anywhere but the Juniper, even if someone did let him check in. With his demeanor and his sneaking around, no one would let him stay longer than a night, if at all, and I was certain he couldn't afford anywhere else anyway. Besides, I worried for Poppy if he did. Duke sat up.
Happy, huh?
I nodded. The oven beeped and I opened the door, sliding in the casserole. I faced Duke, his round eyes bulging from the anger that always seemed to boil inside of him. Can I get you anything else? One of his eyes twitched, but he said nothing. I offered a forced smile and then made my way to the front door, my feet moving faster with each step. By the time I pushed through to the porch, I ran straight into Elliot.
Whoa, hey,
he said with a smile. It quickly faded when he saw the look on my face.
Are you all right?
I glanced behind me. What are you doing here? He smirked.
I was in the neighborhood.
I pushed him out the door. We should go. Come on.
Where?
He asked, glancing at Duke behind me. He was standing next to the bottom of the stairs, watching us from under his brows. Anywhere, please, let's just go.
Okay,
Elliot said, taking my hand. He led me down the steps, down the uneven sidewalk and out the gate, letting it crash behind us. We walked toward the park, and the farther we got from my house, the less panicked I felt. Elliot didn't ask me any questions while we walked, which I appreciated even more than his hand still encompassing mine. It was impossible to hate him, no matter how much I tried. Once we reached the curb that bordered the clearing surrounded by birch and maple trees, I tugged on Elliot's hand, choosing the far bench. It was next to a smelly trash can, but had the better shade. I relaxed against the back of the bench, willing my heartbeat to slow. My hands were shaking. Duke didn't come around often, but when he did, it was terrifying.
Catherine, are you okay?
Elliot finally asked after several minutes of silence.
You looked scared.
I'm okay, I said. You just startled me.
Then what was that all about?
I forgot to stock the rooms with towels last night. One of the guests was upset. Elliot wasn't convinced.
Are you that afraid of getting in trouble?
I didn't answer. Elliot sighed.
You don't have to tell me unless someone is hurting you. Is someone hurting you?
No. He was deciding if he should believe me or not, and then he nodded.
I saw you at school today. I called your name. You didn't answer.
When? I asked.
At lunch. You'd just gotten up to throw away your tray. I tried to catch up with you, but you rounded the corner and disappeared.
Oh.
What do you mean, oh?
I ducked into the bathroom. Presley and the clones were headed in my direction.
So you hid?
It's better than the alternative.
Which is?
Engaging. I glanced down at his watch. What time is it?
Almost 7.
The sun was already setting. Shouldn't you be at football practice? He looked down at himself, and I realized what a sweaty, dirty mess he was, still in a football t-shirt and navy blue practice shorts.
I came straight over. I don't know. I had a bad feeling, and as soon as I walked onto the porch, you came barreling into me. Now we're sitting here like nothing happened. I'm worried about you.
Why? He lifted his eyebrows.
I already told you. You look scared, and I know you're not telling me everything.
I leaned to the side, scratched my chin with my shoulder, and then looked away. You know, maybe not everything is your business.
I didn't say it was, but I can still worry about you.
I didn't ask you to worry about me. I closed my eyes. I don't want you to worry about me.
You can't help anyway. Your life is messed up enough for both of us. Stop.
I turned to face him, surprised at the lack of hurt on his face.
Stop what?
Trying to piss me off. It's not going to work.
I opened my mouth to speak, but hesitated. He was right. Pushing people away was what I had done since